New Year, same extra value meals at McDonald's. So now get two snack wraps plus fries and a medium soft drink for just $8.
For limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. Prices may be higher in Hawaii, Alaska, and California, and for delivery.
You're listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. From the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. A moment here for John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. John Daspit and his firm are personal injury attorneys. They're going to bring you a personalized approach. You go to DaspitLaw.com, 713-322-HURT. Whether your accident is car, boat, motorcycle, you might work at a construction plant, refinery, you might drive an 18-wheeler. Doesn't matter what your accident is. The Daspit Law Firm is going to assure you that they'll treat your case as if it's their own. It's DaspitLaw.com. 24/7 nights and weekends, they'll work for you. Fight for your right for compensation with the Daspit Law Firm. DaspitLaw.com. 713-322-4878. That's HURT. Now, I also want to remind you about Bud Light, because I always speak on behalf of Bud Light. They're my favorite political party. Yep, the Bud Light Party. People say the country's divided, that we disagree on everything. I'm going to tell you that's not true. We agree on a lot, like puppy videos. Everybody likes puppy videos, three-day weekends, free parking, queso, margaritas. You know what else everybody loves? Beer. Nothing brings America together like Bud Light. So raise one right now. Join the Bud Light Party and myself every Wednesday at 7 p.m. for the best in soccer talk, self-proclaimed. Now, since Bob Bradley has been named the manager of Premier League side Swansea City, I think it's important for us to go back to an interview I did with him. Now, remember, he took Egypt, and then he was in Norway with Stabæk, also with Le Havre in France, in the French League 2. So here's my interview with Bob Bradley. And in this interview, it's pretty telling and interesting to look at this based on the fact now that we've gone forward and he's gotten the job at Swansea. Bob Bradley, part one. So, Bob, why choose Egypt, the Egyptian national team, and what was behind the thought process there as a manager?
I got fired from the U.S. after the Gold Cup. Great final. Nobody gave us credit for a great final, great match. When you lose, the knives come out, and I was finished. And I always had this idea that I wanted to work in Europe. I wanted to get back into club football. But when you're looking for a job in the middle of the summer, it's not the best time for club football. And I got this call from Egypt. They remembered our team from the Confederations Cup in 2009. Obviously, one of my great friends, Zach Abdel, Egyptian-American, was the goalkeeper coach with the U.S., and people had checked with him to see if I might have an interest. And Zach and I flew from California to Cairo to spend 2 days to try to figure out if it made any sense. And those 2 days, they were still trying to think through their list of candidates. But I said to Zach, it would be an amazing challenge. It would be a once-in-a-lifetime experience, and let's see what happens. And I went back about 3 weeks later on my own, and I said to them at that point, I need a better idea what it would be like. Where would we live? How will we work? And at that point, they said, don't bring Zach back. And Zach was hurt by that. And I said, don't worry, Zach. I just need to get there, size it all up. And when all was said and done, I talked to my wife, and we discussed it in the family, and we felt that it was again, a unique challenge, unique opportunity, and I've always been up for challenges, so took it.
Bob, you simply went back there on your own without your agent, without any support people to negotiate this?
Yeah, not to negotiate. They tried. They put I think it was a napkin on the table and told me to write out what I wanted. And I laughed and said, no, that's not my job. My job now is just to see if it fits. If I want to come, who I can bring, what my staff will be like. And then ironically, they said, well, we have a press conference scheduled at 11 a.m. tomorrow. And I said, Yeah, that's no problem. If it doesn't get worked out, I'll go on the press conference and tell everybody I'm not taking the job. So you're not going to squeeze me. We'll figure this out. And I don't think I slept that night. I thought it through, and I've gotten good over the years at making decisions where you size things up quickly and sort of put yourself through the ringer. And I spoke to my wife, Lindsay, and eventually the next morning, after they had squared the details away with my agent, then I said, okay, let's do it.
Bob Bradley joining us here at ESPN 97.5. Fascinating story. Were you at a point where you wanted to do something different? In other words, you wanted to leave the country. How much of this was pioneering? Because you are pioneering, whether you want to admit it or not, because you're doing things no other American coach has ever done before. So how much of this was pioneering? How much of this was, you know, something fresh, something different for you personally as a manager?
You know, I don't spend any time about thinking about the pioneering side. I enjoyed my time with the U.S. That was an honor. I don't think we got enough credit or respect for what we did, plain and simple. That's from U.S. soccer and from, quite honestly, many of the people in the country. You know, maybe some look back now and can figure it out, but when it's done, it's done. And I had always said that when I was finished, I wasn't going to talk a lot. I wasn't going to carry on. I was going to move on, look for new challenges. I always wanted to try to prove myself in Europe. I wanted to be in club football. I wanted the chance to show people how good I was. But, like I said, the timing wasn't perfect, and it's still not easy to get your foot in the door in Europe. And so, for me, the Egypt opportunity was just different. It was at a historic time in the country. Egypt hadn't been to the World Cup since 1990. I knew how much it meant to everyone there to see if we could get a team to the World Cup. Ironically, today is February 1st, and it's a four-year anniversary from the massacre that took place in Port Said. And I've traded messages with players and many of my great friends in Egypt because what took place that day, I'll never forget. There were two matches. One was in Cairo. That was Malik and Smiley. And then there was one in Port Said between Masri and Ali. And we had talked about which one we would go to. And we decided to stay in Cairo. We knew we could watch the first half of the other match on TV and then go to Cairo Stadium and watch the rest on TV and watch Malik play. And there was talk that the fans didn't get along and that there would be some tension in the stadium. Watched the first half on TV. It was definitely a tense atmosphere. But you didn't think anything of it. We got to Cairo Stadium, and then late in the game, Masri scored a couple of goals to take the lead. And then when the game ended, and I'm sure many people have seen it on video and YouTube and everything, people stormed the field, and the players scrambled, literally running for their lives. And it was strange because the security forces that were on the field didn't do anything. And even at that point, we didn't think much of it. And so we sat down to watch the game in Cairo Stadium, and then we started to get reports in the first half that there was that there were people killed inside the stadium. And the second half of our match was never played. Spent the whole night watching news reports and talking to Zach and Dia Osaid, my other assistant. And then the next morning, February 2nd, Lindsay and I and Zach went to Sphinx Square, and we marched with the people because we knew that that this was not just fan violence. We knew that this was a massacre. 74 young men who had gone to a football match and lost their lives. I saw all the players from Ali a day later at the memorial, and many of them were going to be keys to the national team. And when I looked in their faces, I knew that they had witnessed things that would never go away. A lot of these young guys had lost their lives inside the locker room. That became the first aid station. Many of them at that point said, we're finished. We're not playing football ever again. And I knew we had a World Cup qualifier 4 months later. So we had to begin to think, how would we work? The league was canceled. Players stopped being paid. And through it all, this amazing group of guys came together. And as you know, we won 7 of 8 World Cup qualifiers. But the one tough loss in Kumasi prevented us from getting to Brazil. But these guys are fantastic guys. Obviously, Mohamed Salah, Mohamed Elneny have gone on to really big things. For me, one of the biggest disappointments was Abu Treka, who's just an incredible guy. I wanted to see him in the World Cup more than anything. Didn't get that chance. We all shared tough moments and found a way to work together. And when you do that in those type of circumstances, it's special. And when you're called on in those moments to lead and show people how to be strong and how to be united, then it's a test. And when you come through it, you feel proud of what we were able to do, even if we didn't quite get to the World Cup.
Bob, did you and your wife, did you ever fear for your life?
No. Before I went, I talked to different people, and I was always told that things will heat up, but if you're aware, if you pay attention, then you know there's places to avoid at certain times, and then it'll quiet down. And you know, we lived right in Cairo. I thought that was important, that in order to have a chance to succeed, that you had to understand the culture and you had to be part of things. As I mentioned, we made some incredibly good friends. We still keep in touch with many people. Towards the latter part of our 2 years, there were some moments when things got a little bit more random. And you could tell that that there was more starting to happen beneath the surface. And actually that speaks to many of the things that we see in the Middle East and Northern Africa and now in Europe today, because things have gotten more random. And given what's happened in Syria and people who travel freely and get there and come back and have changed, and obviously the way information is thrown around on the internet, it's harder to keep track of things. But during our time, we not only felt safe, but the appreciation that Egyptians had for people who would come to their country and live in Egypt and try to give something to the country. People appreciate that. We had moments when one of our favorite places in Cairo was the Children's Cancer Hospital. And normally we would like to go and do it in a quiet way. But we were made to believe that, you know what, it's important that you come here. It shows people what's happening. And if you don't mind, it will help us raise money. And so we did spots, and we allowed it to be out there. And there were times where we would be walking in our neighborhood, and a taxi would stop, and someone would get out of the taxi and walk over to Lindsay and I and say, we want to thank you for everything you do for Egyptians. So they're very warm people. They're very proud of their country and their culture. And if you're there and you're trying to do something that they think is good for the country, they'll never forget it.
All right, so that's part one of Bob Bradley. Part two is going to come up. Before we do, though, quick word here for Bar Munich. Get down to one of the great soccer-watching spots in Houston. Bar Munich, say hello to my friend Raymond down there. Wonderful open-airy spot. Football fans, you're going to love it down there, right in the heart of Midtown, Bar Munich on Louisiana. I believe that's where the Bayern Munich fan club goes. BarMunich.com, 2616 Louisiana. A Soccer Matters pub. And also, the Gorgeous Gale. If you want an Irish pub with that real Irish feel, this is over in West University, then the Gorgeous Gale is the place for you. Soccer fans, head over to the Gorgeous Gale, 5555 Morningside Drive. You'll catch all the best soccer and football matches there. Stop by for a pint and a bite. They got whiskey offerings there. You'll say hello to my friend Peter, who's a huge Liverpool fan. The Liverpool Supporters Group That's where they congregate. Open field, lots of monitors, outdoor patio. The Gorgeous Gale is the place to be. TheGorgeousGale.com, an official Soccer Matters pub. And by the way, that place, there will be some people over there on Monday for the Liverpool-Manchester United game. Ooh, can't wait for that one. All right, we'll take a 7-Up break. We'll take also a break from Bud Light.
ESPN 97.5. You're listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. From the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Glenn Davis.
We roll on here with Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. You know I'm passionate about great food and my friends at Liberty Kitchen. Good friend Carl Eves over there. We've had Lance Fegan in studio. We've had chefs in studio. It's always great fun. Now look, they serve up lunch and supper and brunch better than most. I think of it as modern American comfort food. Their classics taken up a bunch of notches, with a real Liberty Kitchen twist. The best burgers, mac and cheese, chicken fried, mom's spaghetti chowder, farm stand crisp food that Liberty Kitchen stamps its claim on and owns. It's big flavor served at a neighborhood social. They've got the staples too, by the way. I love the raw bar. I love the salmons, the cooked salmons, deviled eggs, all kinds of gumbo with the blue crab. You have to get it with the blue crab, by the way. Oysters on the half shell, cowboy surfers, the po' boy, burger bowls, you name it. Smoked meats, chops, steaks, ribs, fish, signature cocktails, cold beer on tap. Now you understand why Liberty Kitchen is a regular stop for me. Liberty Kitchen, it's Heights, River Oaks, Rice Village, Garden Oaks, the Treehouse in Memorial City. It is happening right there. Also, the Richmond Arms, Houston's premier soccer pub, the King's Head and Richmond Arms, designed and built with soccer in mind for your superior watching entertainment. And watch your favorite club this upcoming season, RichmondArmsOnline.com or the King's Head Pub, Houston.com. All right, time now for part two, Bob Bradley, the interview.
One of our favorite places in Cairo was the Children's Cancer Hospital. And normally we would like to go and do it in a quiet way. But we were made to believe that, you know what, it's important that you come here. It shows people what's happening. And if you don't mind, it will help us raise money. And so we did spots, and we allowed it to be out there. And there were times where we would be walking in our neighborhood, and a taxi would stop, and someone would get out of the taxi and walk over to Lindsay and I and say, we want to thank you for everything you do for Egyptians. So they're very warm people. They're very proud of their country and their culture. And if you're there and you're trying to do something that they think is good for the country, they'll never forget it.
Fascinating story, Bob. Is this testament to that when one goes to another country, you must be a part of the culture and you must be respectful? Those are all the things that obviously are coming through here. And I think that it sounds as though Egyptians recognize from you and your wife.
Yeah, I think that is important. I think that wherever you go, to get to know people, to let them know who you are, to care about what's happening in the country, to care about people, to try to connect. I mean, this is what happens in the best circumstances. And again, whether you're talking about Doctors Without Borders or whether you're talking about the Peace Corps or so many incredible operations that go and touch lives. I mean, to be part of something, to get to know people, to be there and try to let them know who you are, that's what it's all about. So when you have the chance and football is incredibly important in Egypt. The recognition factor for me was through the roof. And at times, of course, you know, you needed a little privacy and everything, but still you knew that people still appreciated that you were there. I was asked more than anything else when I was in Egypt, why are you still here? Because the mentality there is when things go wrong, you leave. And as I mentioned, when I sat down and met with players and talked to them after Port Said and got a sense of the challenge, I spoke to all of them about how important it was that now we would try to be united, that we would try to show people what could happen if you work together. And in order to do that, it couldn't be that I was looking for a way out. So it's a test of your leadership. And I've been lucky over the years in different situations. I feel like I've been able to stand for something, to lead in a way that people appreciated, to try to build a group that has strength and pride. And I talk about that all the time. So for me, Egypt was not the first time I was in that situation, but it was a different experience and one that we'll always remember.
Bob Bradley joining us here on ESPN 97.5, then went on to coach Stabæk in Norway. That made Bob the first American coach in a top league, now at Le Havre in the French League 2. And it's pretty remarkable, the different cultures you've gone through. I mean, this whole uprising in Egypt, being a part of this. As you move on and you move forward now and you're in France, how has this enriched you as a coach? Because obviously the cultural side of it is one thing, but then there's all these differing playing styles and emphasis on maybe different things in different countries, right?
Yes, that's true. But what I found over the years is still that my ideas on the game stood up. When I coached in Major League Soccer, I was tested and challenged by a lot of really big players. And, you know, when you coach guys like Peter Novak and Lubos Kubik and Christo Stoichkov and Yuri Djurkaeff and Claudio Suarez, you get tested. And that was one of the reasons why I was always anxious to move up. And when you coach guys like that, you can't be afraid of them, you know. You can't be afraid to get on top of them on days when they're not into it or to hold them to high standards. You know, I remember tough days with all those guys. I still share some great moments with Christo because he knew in certain days when I would be on top of him for either not being into it or not treating certain teammates the right way. And guys respect when you hold them to real standards, when you understand football, when you run good training sessions, when you make tough decisions and you look them in the eye. And so by the time I got to Egypt and by the time I got to Norway and now here, my ideas were pretty set. Now, of course, you always try to pick up new things. But probably more than anything, what I would end up saying after these different experiences is that, you know, in every country there's a coaching manual. There's one in the U.S. There's the coach of the head of the academy, and Stabæk was from Spain. So we had the Norwegian manual. We had the Spanish manual. Now I know the French manual. They all have some parts that are the same, and they all have some little twists. But what I've found in every situation is that you don't coach with the manual. And I used to tell the young coaches in Norway, and I said the same to the young ones here in France, that you need to know what's in the manual, but when it comes time to coach, leave it on the shelf. Because coaching is still about personality and ownership and leadership and knowing how to challenge players and notice and knowing how to push training sessions. And, you know, probably the thing that I've also said more than anything else is that I've seen too many coaches that they coach the exercise. If you say today we were on a work on transition, then they have five training sessions for transition. But what happens is they coach the exercise, and they don't coach the game, and they don't coach the players. And I find this incredible. So, you know, in Norway, the word got out, and there were coaches from all over Norway that would show up to watch our training because it was different than what they were used to. And when I took the UEFA Pro course in Norway, they were very interested to know how I developed my ways on the field, what were my influences, because it was different. So, you know, at the end of it all, when you're involved in football, you get tested. And when your ideas hold up, when you are able to develop players, when your teams play good football, when people enjoy watching the team play and see something different, then they want to know, how did it get that way? And so I've enjoyed being part of these different situations and getting to know how things work, but also giving them an idea of who I am and how I got that way.
He's Bob Bradley joining us here, Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5, joining us from France now, the manager of Le Havre and the French League 2. Fascinating stories here. Bob, how much, like, you know, obviously tactically you have a vision of how the game wants to be, you want it to be played, although it's ever-changing, we know that. How much did you have to maybe pull off some of your positions in these different countries in order to remain flexible as a manager? Because we do know some managers can run their course if they aren't flexible. You obviously have been.
Yeah, in every situation I've been in, the first day I normally end up saying something like, I didn't come here with all the answers. I have my ideas on football and how it should be played, but I need to get to know you, and you need to get to know me. And then together we're going to figure out how we're going to have a good team. And you've got to understand the game at all levels to then try to piece what your team's going to look like. You know, I can remember even going back with our U.S. teams. When we would play different teams, when you saw what it was like to play Sweden and you had Elmander and Ibra as the strikers, when Luis Fabiano was the striker for Brazil, one of the things you piece together quickly is physically the challenge that your center backs had. And then the fact that it meant that you needed guys that could defend, guys that weren't afraid to play against big players. And of course, you want to play football. You want to try to find passes out of the back. But having said that, the first requirement for central defenders is that they can defend. And I remember when we started working with Jay DeMeritt. In his early years at Watford, I don't think he was ever called on to make a pass. But then, you know, Maki McKay got there, and they started to play a little bit of football. And when he would come in with the U.S., we would just try to say, look, Jay, you know, we still need in certain moments that you have enough confidence that when there is a little window that you can play certain balls into the midfield. But at the same time, if you feel it's tight, then we understand. Look to play to our forwards. And so you've got to have a sense then that you know, if your center backs are Jay DeMeritt and Gucci Onyewu, then guess what? Your football is going to look different than if your center backs are Puyol and Pique. But those guys improved. And I love the fact that every time we played against a big team, and now you're hugging guys before the game and looking in them in the eye and making sure they're ready. And Jay would give me a little wink, like, Wayne Rooney, no problem, right? And so your ideas on how you want to play have to fit with who your players are. They have to fit with then what the game is going to look like. We had many games with the U.S. where we were able to be a little bit more in control. But having said that, if we played Spain, we also knew from watching all of their games that, like it or not, they were going to have the ball more than us, and that we needed to still find a way that we could make it hard on them. We could still make them defend when we had the ball, and that even if the percentage was 60-40 you know, I think before the Confederations Cup semifinal, I said, come on, can we even get it a little better than that? But either way, it doesn't matter, because if we can cause their center backs some trouble, if we can be a threat, if we can make them feel the speed of Altidore, the speed of Charlie Davies, if we can shut things down in the center of the field so Xavi doesn't have an easy day, and guess what? We can play football. We can beat this team. So your tactics and your ideas have to fit your players, and they've got to be prepared in a way that when those players walk on the field, every single guy believes, you know what, we're going to win today.
Bob, thank you so much for, first of all, giving us all this time. We appreciate it. We're looking forward to catching up with you again down the road here, because we want to keep this rolling with Bob Bradley and keep following your career over in Europe.
Good, Glenn. All the best.
So that's a Bob Bradley interview from about 6 months ago, prior to him now getting the job at Swansea. And by the way, it all starts for Bob this weekend against Arsenal, at Arsenal in the Premier League. Quick word here for Kings Court, 903 Hutchins, right by the south side of the stadium in downtown. Go in there, ask for Jay. They've got killer British pub food, Indian food that's amazing. I had the kebabs there, the lamb and chicken kebabs, incredible. I had them before the NWSL final. They got a rooftop that nobody's got in that area. This rooftop has incredible views of BBVA Compass Stadium. It's actually beautiful at night. It's a great, cool vibe up there. Grab a meal, great DJs. They got a cool, interesting, very open place with a lot of monitors. And I'll see you there after Dynamo matches. So Dynamo fans, start heading over there to the Kings Court, 903 Hutchins. They've got a great choice and great beer selection there, cocktails, you name it. It is new, it is unique, it is different, and it is fun, and it is real football. NCAA Men's College Cup, December 9th and December 11th. The semis are on the 9th. It's on national TV, ESPN. We don't want you to watch it on TV. We want you to get out to the stadium, because we want to fill the stadium and remind people around the country that Houston is one of the great soccer cities here in the United States. And we know we are, but some of these matches, we're not getting the crowds we need to. NCAA.com for your tickets. If you are a parent of players in the youth community, you as a parent should be demanding that your youth coaches are asking and taking these young men down to the game, and women, to show them what the next level is. These are going to be the top four teams in the nation that'll come to Houston. This is a wonderful opportunity and a big piece of player development. So let's do it. Youth coaches, youth players, parents, high school coaches, we're really counting on you to kind of organically rally and provide that important connection to your programs, and just look beyond your program to the bigger picture. NCAA Men's College Cup, NCAA.com for tickets. We will see you there. We'll take a break. Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. This is the best in soccer talk.
ESPN 97.5. You're listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. From the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to ESPN 97.5. A reminder about one of my favorite restaurants in Houston. It's the Liberty Kitchen. Now, you know I'm passionate about food. I go over there after these shows. I'm eating pretty much everything that's been on that menu. I'm a big raw oyster guy, so I love the raw bar. Best burgers, mac and cheese. There's some great salad, too. Sometimes late night, I don't want to eat heavy. I do the kale salad, but I throw a couple of slices of salmon on there. Liberty Kitchen staples, deviled eggs, Creole gumbo. You got to get the blue crab meat with it, though. You can't go without it. Cowboy Surfers, they got good po' boys over there. Chops, steaks, ribs, and fish. They mix up wonderful signature cocktails and have all the cold beer on tap. Now you understand why Liberty's Kitchen is a real stop for me and a regular stop. Liberty Kitchen, lunch, supper, and brunch. You stop by in the Heights, River Oaks, Rice Village, Garden Oaks. Well, Garden Oaks is cool, by the way. It's right across from an American Legion building, and it's pretty cool. There's a big plane that's actually there in the yard, but that's really a neighborhoody kind of feel there. It's very cool. Treehouse in Memorial City also has opened up as well. So it's a wonderful spot, the Liberty Kitchen, my good friend Carl Eves and Lance Fegan in company over there. Also want to remind you about the Daspit Law Firm. John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm, they're going to work for you 24-7. They're going to give you a personalized approach. It's DaspitLaw.com, 713-322-HURT. 713-322-4878. Now, it doesn't matter what your accident is. They're going to assure you that they're going to treat your case as if it's their own. It might be motorcycle, car, boat, industrial, construction, plant, refinery, 18-wheeler. It doesn't matter. They're going to work for you 24-7. Fight for your right for compensation with the Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLaw.com, 713-322-HURT. Now, a couple of weeks ago, I did an interview with Tally Hall. And Tally Hall's interview, this is not essentially about soccer. I wanted to re-air this because this is about a human that has a calling. And it's not just soccer when it comes to Tally Hall. So this is a human interest piece, I think, as well. Tally Hall, we all remember here in Houston, had that spectacular 2004. The season that really jumps out to me, he had great years. 2013, he was unbelievable. Single-handedly, I think, put the Dynamo in the playoffs as a goalkeeper. Won the Dynamo games, won the Dynamo points. Tally then went on to Orlando, played down there. Remember, he had the knee injury, opened the door for Tyler Derrick. He moved to Orlando City, had a couple of great games there in front of huge crowds, and now is going to join the Orlando Police Force. So here is Tally Hall. All right, soccer fans, tonight we wrap it up in big style. Tally Hall is going to join us here from Orlando, Florida, and as always, we're certainly happy to have Tally on the program. Tally, thank you very much for joining us tonight.
Glenn, it is always a pleasure.
All right,
always love coming on your show.
I know. We're going to talk about a lot of things here as we wrap it up tonight. But, you know, I just want to, and I know this is right off the top, before we get into some of the soccer-related things, you've made a huge career choice here. And to go into the police force of Orlando from playing professional soccer is incredibly rare. And, you know, I drive around Houston, and sometimes I'm at a red light, and I look at a police officer, and I say, wow, I wonder what his wife thought when he walked out the door this morning, knowing the dangers of his job. Here you are with a family. Tell me how you came about this decision, because this is a rarity.
You know, the more I've gotten into it, the more I kind of find that there are quite a number of athletes that have gotten into the police force. So it's not, to me it doesn't seem like a crazy idea at all. I mean, for me it feels like something that has been building up for a long time, especially with everything that's going on in the world and in the U.S. the news. It's kind of like I've been looking at what I do as a soccer player, and I've enjoyed what I've done, and I've gotten such a great life experience with it. But then I see what's going on in the world, and I think, you know what, I think there's something more important, more meaningful for me, and I have a calling to serve and have a positive impact in the community, and I think I can do both those things, as a police officer. So I don't think it's crazy at all. I mean, I know it's a dangerous time to be a cop, but I don't think there's ever really been a safe time. But, it's something that I felt like I needed to do. It's a great opportunity for me to work with a good department and set some roots down. And as an athlete, people on the outside looking in don't understand that, you know, I've moved around a lot to get back to the top. I probably was going to have to continue to move around and figure my life out to kind of find my opportunity again. And, you know, I just mentally I wasn't willing to do that to myself and to my family. So for me, I'm thrilled about it.
Well, again, I don't think anybody who got to meet you in Orlando or here or throughout your life couldn't recognize very quickly that you were a person that were concerned about other people. And you bring up the word serve. And, you know, I think every male in America at some point or another asks themselves the question somewhere at some point, you know, wow, what would it be like if I was in the Army or in the armed forces or a Marine or in the Navy or I was overseas in battle. And I look at my father, 90 years old, who survived Okinawa. How does that happen? So I don't think, any male that's on the face of the earth probably has asked themselves that question. And that's why I think it's pretty amazing what you're doing. And I know you're kind of downplaying it, and other athletes have done it, but you know, you have a family. How did this decision come about? How much talking with your wife did you have to do?
Well, if I'm being totally honest, there were times in Houston, those first 2 years I was there, that I wasn't sure that I wanted to continue playing then, you know, it was one of those things that I had this calling to serve. I seriously looked at, not playing and joining the military, decided to stick with soccer. And I haven't, obviously I haven't regretted that decision. It's been a great career and a great ride. And my family's got to experience a lot of really good things. But at the same time, to say that I felt guilty about not joining the military is not the right phrase. But I felt like I had something to offer that was something more important than myself. And professional athletics, as much as you're in a team environment, as soon as you start getting a paycheck, you're constantly trying to get more playing time or a bigger piece of the pie, or you're just trying to stay in it. And there's a very much an individual aspect of it. I'm excited about not having that. The focus is helping the community. And if you're the best police officer in your unit, you get paid the same as everyone else. You're not doing it for money. You're doing it for all the right reasons. So, to not join the military and now 10 years of playing, looking at it, this is an opportunity for me to do that. I'm obviously too old to join the military. And even if I wasn't, I'm really looking forward to living in one spot, not traveling every other weekend, missing kids' sports and activities. So I'm excited to kind of get those roots and do something besides trying to get more spotlight. I mean, I've done a lot of interviews this week, and none as special as this, by the way, Glenn. I'd like to point that out. I'm looking forward to be a quiet kind of professional public servant. You know, I'm not looking for any attention. I just want to have a positive impact.
He's Tally Hall. He's joining us here. Played for the Houston Dynamo. So many outstanding seasons here. Did the time, as he just mentioned, behind Pat Onstad, and got his break. And boy, he ran with it. Two MLS Cups, and then I'm going to go to 2013, Tally. And that year, did the ball look like a beach ball to you? I mean, yeah. I went into calling games going, this guy's not going to be beat tonight. It doesn't matter what happens in front of him. He's not going to be beat.
Well, you know, it was one of those things that I just felt like the defenders and myself just kind of had a great understanding where, you know, we're working off each other. The attackers are being put in corners. And then when I was called upon, it's like, you know, it was always within range. And if it went past me, I had multiple defenders saving off the line. I mean, obviously, Kofi Sarkodie, I just saw a replay of it when I was watching an MLS game last weekend. I mean, so it just felt like it was one of those years where we were all just working together. One of those, like, we were, you know, the back four and I were just a unit of five, and it was a lot of fun because all the games were a fight. And, you know, obviously my time with the Dynamo, as much as we had success in the postseason, I mean, every game was a fight. It wasn't always celebrations at the end of it. We squeaked into the playoffs. You know, we had to wait till the last weekend or close to it. And so that's what I look back and remember. That 2013 year was definitely, yeah, it's like we just seemed to always kind of pull it out. And it was one of those years where at the end of the game, we were in the locker room kind of laughing at each other. Not because it just felt like we were, like, somehow we did it again, you know? And so it was a fun defensive year for all of us.
Tally, how do you sum up your time in Orlando? Because, you know, in fact, I think I did your first game back off injury against LA, right? The big win. I think it was about 50,000 people. Yeah, that was a great day. And that was you coming back from the injury. But sum up your time in Orlando. That was a wonderful day for you, Orlando. That day you beat the LA Galaxy convincingly. But man, that crowd and that passion there was just something I'll never forget.
Yeah, it's it's describing the teams I've played for and the experiences. It's like talking about your kids. I mean, each one is different and special, and you can't take any away from it. My time in Houston was just phenomenal, and then Orlando was something different. It was a different role for me, and the city and the passion that the fans have is amazing. It really is turning into a hotbed of support here for MLS soccer and U.S. soccer. But what I'll remember is kind of a different role for me. It's the first time I got to put on a captain's armband as a professional soccer player. You know, when I think Kaká got red carded or something, and he walked up to me and put the armband on me. I mean, that's a special moment. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, you know, taking on a new leadership role was probably something that you know, I'll sum up with it, that had the most impact on me. Obviously, being told throughout the year that, hey, we're going to continue your contract on, and then I get hurt, and then they don't pick up my option. And that was a difficult mental status or state for me. But if that didn't happen, then I wouldn't be where I am right now doing what I'm doing. And I'm being honest, I'm very excited about my career change. I think it's happening at the right time for me. I feel great. My body feels great. So I feel like I'm able to give this new career 100%.
So what happens? You just walk into the Orlando police and say, you know, I'm Tally Hall. I'd like to be a police officer. How do I go about it? Or is there a recruitment, or how does this work?
To be a cop, I don't think people realize until they try to apply how intense and exhausting the process is to be a police officer. I mean, I think I applied in January. And this is the earliest that I could get in to an academy. So, I mean, that's a long time to wait. And so I was fortunate. I had talked to the police officers that were involved of bench security last year in Orlando. And, you know, they kind of piqued my interest. They kind of started talking about what the lifestyle is as a cop. And I thought, you know, there's a lot more to being a cop than just writing speeding tickets. And you know, so I was like, it was something that kind of opened my eyes to there's a lot of ways you can make a difference and have a positive effect. So I you know, they had said, hey, when I got cut from Orlando, they're like, hey, you can keep the job in Orlando. Like, come on, there's a we are hiring type of thing. And I don't think they realized how serious I was when I said, yeah, I'll do it. And so, yeah, I had to go through the application process just like everyone else. You know, it's an online application. Then you have to get approved for the first round. Then you got to take a written test and then a physical test and then, you know, a psych. And you got to do an interview and then a panel interview and then a chief's interview, another polygraph. I mean, there are so many hurdles to you know, get over and get through that, you know, definitely a new appreciation for all cops and when it comes to how hard it was for them to get a job, because I know how hard it was for me to get this. I mean, it was not easy.
Does the climate now with police officers and how edgy it is right now, does that concern you?
Well, I do kind of look at it as, listen, I haven't been in a life or death situation. I never have. And I'm going into something where there's likelihood that I will be facing something where things get very serious and that can happen very quickly. But I will say that I am used to, when it comes to national media, obviously body cameras and people filming, I don't have a problem, being accountable for my actions. I think for the last 10 years as a professional athlete, I mean, all your actions are being judged and analyzed, and, you know, every teammate has their opinion. Every coach has his opinion. Every analyst has their opinion, and certainly every fan has their opinion. And so you have to act with everyone kind of having a magnifying glass over you. So I don't want to say that I know, you know, how I'm going to act and blah blah blah. But I will say that I'm comfortable with the idea of having my you know, accountability for my actions. That's what I'm used to with soccer, and as I become a police officer, I'm okay with my actions being analyzed, and you know, if I ever get in a situation where people are watching a video and sitting there judging me, you know, I'd have faith in myself that everything I do, I'm gonna do to make a positive difference, and that's sometimes taking bad guys off the street, and sometimes that's lending out a helping hand whenever you can. So, you know, that accountability is something I'm used to, and really I am getting into this and to be a positive difference. I look at community relationships between police officers and citizens as a high priority, and, you know, good community relationships are something that I've been practicing building for a while now. So not going to directly translate, but mentally I'm ready to take on that role as well.
Talia, I don't think anybody could have put it better in words right there. You are an amazing candidate. I would liken you to that guy who does that commercial, who's the world's most interesting guy. You could be that guy now, I think. That's kind of what I'm thinking.
I am not. I don't think the world's most interesting guy tucks his kids in and then goes straight to his bed and tries to fall asleep as fast as possible. But I appreciate the compliment. I have drank Dos Equis before. So.
There you go. Well, you know, we're a Bud Light station here, so we'll just... Okay. But that's all right. See, that's good radio, because you just segued me into saying that we love Bud Light on this network for supporting the sport of soccer. Last thing before I let you go, and I think this is something I want to thank you for. I always have appreciated how you would talk to the media, win or lose. You did it responsibly. You did it with accountability. You did it honestly. And I think there's something that can be learned from you in the way you dealt with media, especially, you know, in certain markets where you're trying to ingrain the sport into the mainstream a little bit more. You took that part of the job very seriously.
Well, yeah, I've always kind of found it funny that there are definitely players who take offense, and maybe take offense is the wrong word, but get kind of frustrated if there's someone in the media or, you know, someone whose voice is heard that criticizes them. And for me, I always thought, if I'm in a spot that people are criticizing me, that's kind of the spot that I want to be in. I mean, no one's criticizing the guy on the bench, you know? So if you're getting criticized or people are talking about you, that is part of your job. And media, for the most part, for soccer players, has been good. I mean, I think everyone, not that everyone's working together to grow the sport, but at the same time, there's so many good stories, that are involved with a growing league, that those can kind of outweigh you know, the other negative stories. I mean, because if someone's playing bad right now in the league, there's going to be this young talent that comes through, and that's a better story than a guy that you already know that's not playing well. So as the sport grows, as Major League Soccer gets to be a beast of American sports, and I think it will be that. There is going to be more money and therefore more accountability on players, and guys are going to have to get used to that, and that's part of the job. So, yeah, I mean, I always said if we lost games, the goalkeeper has the best view in the house for explaining why that happened, and I felt like that was my job. There are guys that were frustrated, and for me, you know, I always try to keep an even keel. I guess that's the Tim Hanley. He never got me to do yoga, but he always impressed upon me that the need to be level-headed in a loss, in a win, in a playoff game, in a regular season game. It never mattered. You needed to approach it the same. And yeah, I definitely think there are guys that do that. But at the same time, I think it's important for players to be themselves. If they you know, it's hard to say, like, keep an even head when there are guys that go off on huge rants and all of a sudden all the media wants to follow them. So, you know, I think guys, it's important that guys be themselves, but at the same time, it's your job. If you had a bad game, own up to it. People respect that and work your butt off to have a good game next time.
Tally, as always, thank you so much for coming on the show. I wish you the best of luck in your new career. You sound like the perfect candidate for it. You seem really, really content with where you are. And as always, we thank you for coming on the program.
Thank you, Glenn. And throughout the years, you've been a big, you know, a positive influence on me and helped me from the very beginning. I was talking about the days when, you know, 2009, 2010, you were there saying, hey, Tally, I think you're gonna have a good career. Keep it up. So from day one, Glenn, I just want to say thank you for all your support, and it's been a wild ride. I just want to thank you. I want to thank the fans listening, who have been part of it. I'll cherish that aspect for the rest of my life. I mean, I look back on pictures that I have with my two oldest kids, on BBVA, on the field, you know, running around and the fans screaming and yelling at my kids and supporting them. And it's been amazing. And I just want to thank you and the fans for everything you've done for me and my family. So thank you.
Well, it couldn't happen without you. Listen, thank you. And I promise if I'm ever in Orlando, I'll drive the speed limit.
I'll make sure of it.
You got it. Thank you. That's the one and only Tally Hall. Well, that's a special guy. Very, very interesting what he's doing career wise. And, There's never a person who had a bad thing to say about him. I mean, that guy shared his time, both on and off the field with the fans. He got it, both from the media perspective and from the playing perspective. All right, that's going to do it. Before we go, though, a quick reminder here. I speak as the host of Soccer Matters. Today, I'm speaking on behalf of my favorite political party, the Bud Light Party. People say the country is divided. We disagree on everything. It's not true. We agree on a lot, like puppy videos. Everybody loves puppy videos, three-day weekends, free parking, margaritas. You know what else everybody loves? Beer. Nothing brings America together like Bud Light. Raise one right now. Join the Bud Light Party and myself on Wednesday nights for the best in soccer talk. And I always thank Bud Light for all their great support. My good friend Camilo Rojas over there for years upon years have supported my soccer shows, Soccer Matters, on the radio. Also, a quick word here for the King's Court. 903 Hutchins, right by the stadium. Killer British pub food, Indian food, rooftop with a view of downtown. It is walking distance. It is the closest bar to the stadium on the south side of BBVA Compass Stadium. Let's see more Dynamo fans there, soccer fans there, Chelsea, Manchester United supporters clubs there. Say hello to Jay. They aim to please over there at the King's Court, 903 Hutchins. Tyler Scott, as always, par excellence behind the glass. We appreciate all his great work. It's Twitter, Glenn Davis Sock, Facebook, Soccer Matters, Instagram, Glenn Davis Sock. You can also go over to glenndavissoccer.com. This is where we're putting all our information out. We want to keep you in tuned. We want to keep you informed, and we always want your opinion. Good night.
ESPN
97.5.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to get stronger just around the corner, so you can give everything you've got. Whether you want to crush a few reps before class with our expanded strength equipment or sweat it out on your way home from work. With over 2,800 locations, there's a Planet Fitness close to you, and most are open 24 hours. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends January 30th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Hi, everybody. It's Andy and James here from your next favorite podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. We do fun facts.
Yes, we do. James, give me a fact.
Did you know that there is an extinct bandicoot whose official scientific name is Crash Bandicoot?
Lovely. I didn't know that. Did you know, James, that Upper Egypt is technically below Lower Egypt?
Incredible. Absolutely amazing. I would love to hear more about that.
Well, all you have to do is go and listen to No Such Thing as a Fish.
Where will I find it?
Oh, all over.
Okay, bye.
Bye.